Hello and welcome to Let the Stone Speak. My name is Christopher Eames and I'll be your host for today's program. Today we've got a special interview lined up for you. It is an interview with Dr. Madeline Mumshoglu. She is a research fellow at the Hebrew University's Institute of Archaeology. Now, Dr. Mumshoglu has been involved in several of Professor Yossi Garfinkel's excavations here in Israel, and particularly in the research and publication of a very particular stone shrine box model. Now, this model dates to the end of the 11th or early 10th century BCE, and it exhibits several architectural elements, architectural features that match precisely with the biblical account of the architectural features being used in Solomon's palace and temple complex of the same time period. So this will give a really interesting overview, I think, of this parallel that we find in the biblical text and that we see being used in the archaeological, based on the archaeological evidence. Now, if you're interested in our content, please do go ahead and subscribe to our bi-monthly magazine. This magazine is the exhibit edition that goes along with our exhibit, our brand new exhibit at our auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma. The exhibit is entitled Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered, and it's where this shrine model is currently being displayed. So that'll be for the throughout the course of this year. So if you want to go and see the model, do not come to the Israel Museum to see it. You'll have to go to our auditorium to do so, at least through the course of this year. If you'd like to order specifically this exhibit edition of the magazine, I'll leave a link to do so. And currently our next magazine, our March-April issue, is hitting mailboxes. So if you are interested in our content, please go ahead and subscribe to that. And if you like this video, please go ahead and drop a like and subscribe to us. So without further ado, here is the interview.
So Dr. Mumshoglu, thank you very much for agreeing to this interview.
My pleasure.
My first question has to be, is that the right way to say your last name, Mumshoglu?
Yes, it's perfect.
Okay, good.
And it's a difficult name.
Yeah, it is. But I'm glad I got that right to begin with. This is a very beautiful place you've got here, Think. Thank you very much for having us over. We've got the Mediterranean Sea back behind us. And we've got the book here that was co-written by Dr. Madeline Mumshoglu and Professor Yossi Garfinkel, Solomon's Temple and Palace. Beautiful book here. And I'm not just saying this, I think it's one of my favorites on my shelf. It's just very well laid out with diagrams and illustrations. And then you've just shown me this other one that you've got here, Crossing the Threshold, Architecture, Iconography, and the Sacred Entrance. So for today's program, we're going to talk more specifically about a particular object that was found at Kirbet Kayafa. But maybe before we do that, you could introduce us as to yourself and sort of your background of research or study and how you became involved with Professor Garfinkel's excavations.
Yes. Well, I took some courses at the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. And one of them was done by Professor Garfinkel. It was about Megiddo and Chatzor. A whole year about that. And at the end of the course, he said, if somebody wants to join the digging in Kayafa, I never heard about Kayafa, you just, so he drew a piece of paper and he drew the way to arrive to. So I went there. And I began to help. I tried to help. But soon he came and he said, can you help me? There is a journalist from Italy. She's speaking French also, so. And then he said, she said, do you have any photographs for my article? Yossi looked at her. He didn't know. I said, you don't have a press book, something? No. Okay, so I took care of this. So this was the beginning of our collaboration.
And so you have a French background.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yes.
So you were able to communicate, obviously.
Yeah.
So whereabouts in France?
I was born in French Algeria.
Okay, wow.
And then in 1962, all the French people were kicked out. So I was in Paris for 30 years until I felt I have to go to make Aliyah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I did.
Okay. And so fast-forwarding to the Kerbet Kayafa excavations, I think, was it 2005, 6, 7 he started?
Yes, something like that.
Okay, so when did you join right from the outset? 2012. Okay.
Yes.
And if I understand right, you have been involved in some of his other excavations as well, Kerbet Orai,
yes.
Lachish as well.
From Kayafa, I followed Professor Garfinkel in every digging that he did.
Okay. And you are involved with the Hebrew University of Jerusalem as well, I understand.
Yes, well, I'm supposed to be a research associate.
Okay. So one of these key pieces of key artifacts that you've been involved in researching has been the Kerbet Kayafa shrine model. Now, for anyone in Israel hoping to see this in the Israel Museum, you'll be disappointed because we currently have this on display in our exhibit in Oklahoma, our brand new Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered. So that might make a lot of our American viewers happy. If you get the chance, head on out to Edmond, Oklahoma. We'll leave links in the description and you can check out that exhibit. What can you tell us about the shrine model? What is this object?
First of all, it is a unique shrine model because you don't find any of them made of stone. They are all made of terracotta.
Okay, and what size are we talking?
It's about 35 centimeters high.
Okay.
It was painted red. And he has, when you look at it, well, for me, it is a feeling of déjà vu. I went to the Israel Museum and looked at the entrance of the Second Temple, and it is also similar in entrance as this one. And then I went to the Museum of the Bible in the Old City, and I talked with the head of the rabbi who is in charge with this, and I asked him, why is there... Is this entrance with
recessed? Yeah.
And he didn't say anything. And I said, why do I need him? I'm going to look in the Bible. And it's written clear, quite clear. Mezuzot chamishit, mezuzot revi'it. That means, mezuzot means not the small thing that we are putting on the entrance of our houses.
So that's like the modern meaning of the word.
Yes.
If someone hears mezuzah, that's what they think
exactly.
Of, but not in biblical times.
Mezuzah in the Bible, it's the frame, the door frame.
Okay.
So it is written at the entrance of the Echal, which is a big part of the temple. There are four mezuzot revi'it, which is four.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you go to the Kodesh HaKodeshim, the Holy of Holies, you have five. And by the way, to the Solomon Palace, you have three. So you have a sort of gradation from mundane to holy.
Okay.
So three in the palace, four at the entrance, and five for the Holy of Holies.
Okay. And that's all covered in a lot more detail in this book, particularly about the door frames themselves.
Exactly.
So the depiction in the museums at the time wasn't accurate to what the biblical text says then? They didn't show these recessed frames?
Well, in the museum, as you can see here, they are putting five.
Okay.
There is no indication. Well, anyway, we don't have a lot of indications
mm-hmm.
about the Second Temple.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's right.
Okay.
But actually, when I reviewed in this book a lot, maybe 300 samples of recessed building or items, only one is with five recessed. Only one. So I don't expect this to be right, but, you know.
Okay. So this was kind of a surprise then to find this architectural parallel from something so ancient. What time frame are we talking about for this model? Well, I guess for Kerbet Kayafa in general.
Yes, Kayafa is from the time of King David.
Okay.
So it has been proven by carbon 14 samples. I think we have sent maybe 30 samples that confirm that it is about David's time. And I went to Professor Garfinkel and I said, look, don't laugh at me, but I think it is exactly what the Bible is describing. He said, okay, we are going to look into it.
Mm-hmm.
I said, somebody has a computer with a text, Bible text, let's look now. And we looked, and I think he was convinced, and then he developed other ideas, brilliant ideas about meaning of words in the description of the temple, which were until now not understood.
So by that, are you referring to these objects at the top? Additional not understood meanings?
Yes, exactly. So, okay.
So what can you tell us about what these things are, shall we say?
Well, on the lintel, you can find some small items, which are divided in three parts. Yeah?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So seven, and yes, each divided into three parts.
And it looks exactly like the triglyphs in the Parthenon.
Right.
Greece.
Right.
But the difference is that it is from the time of King David. And you have to wait for 400 years to have this in the classical Greek architecture. You can't find this in the Levant. You can't find triglyphs in another part in the Levant. It's only in Kayafa.
So
and think in the temple. So.
So this was a even more of a surprise, maybe, to have some 400 years earlier,
mm-hmm,
something that's such a Greek style of architecture, it seemed like.
Yeah.
But four centuries earlier, in like the hill country in the Levant.
Yes.
In the Judean hills.
Exactly. In the small Kayafa, the small citadel. It's not a huge place like Athens and, you know, and huge temples and so on. So it is really impressive.
So if I understand right about these triglyphs, they're meant to imitate wood or wooden beams that project.
Exactly.
That sort of hold up the ceiling.
Yeah.
So what in the Bible do we have that would relate to this kind of a thing?
Okay, in the Bible, when you find the description of the Solomon Palace, they are talking about Tzlaot. And it's really interesting because most of the researchers have thought that Tzlaot are pillars. And then they're making the mat. That is four, it is written 45 in rows of three. Okay, so of 15. So if you divide this, you have three, okay? And then they decided that there is a mistake in the biblical text. It's not four rows in the house of Lebanon, three rows. So some example, I think, corrected that to three, which is incredible. Because a line afterwards it says definitely there are four rows. So we thought that the Tzlaot are referring to triglyph. And they are on the top. Actually, they are described on the top of the pillar. So it's understandable. And then you have, we made a sort of a picture, a drawing, showing how it looks on the pillars. You have four rows of pillars, and on top you have 15. 59 triglyph multiplied by 3, it is okay.
So this is 45. Yeah.
Okay. And then we understood that we have this also in the temple, all around the roof. Yeah, this is it's really interesting because it makes sense.
Right. As I understand it, like you say, there had been so much confusion about that passage in First Kings.
Yeah.
Because it very clearly says four rows of pillars.
Yeah.
But the 15 and then the 3 and then the 45 didn't seem to make up, seemed to be obvious error. And so you do have some translations changing it to say three rows of pillars. Yeah. And then I'm aware of one that changed the overall number up to 60. I think it's one of the Arabic translations. Have all this playing with the text. And so that's what I think is one of the most fascinating things about this discovery, is people were so struggling so much with how to interpret this to the point of changing the text.
Mm-hmm.
When once you understand what's going on here, the answer is becomes so plain.
Yeah.
And it's all discussed in some detail in this book. You mentioned the temple having these triglyphs as part of the construction. I think you talk about the passage in Ezekiel that also talks about these triglyphs.
That's right. That's
okay.
Right.
So that it's a similar description to what we have in verse.
All time, you have in a lot of passages, you have by three. So.
Okay, and these are the tzla'ot in groups of three.
Yeah, group of three.
So not to do with the pillars at all, but the things that are standing on the pillars, this classic architectural
It's written,
feature.
It's obvious, there are four rows of pillars, so why look at something else?
Right.
Actually.
Yeah, so that's the stone model. I believe there's another shrine model that was also found at Kibbutz Kayafa. Is there anything interesting about that one as well, or...?
I don't know if you realize, because with the pictures you don't always realize that. It's just a very small one, like this.
Much smaller.
Much smaller. And there was, we thought, not we, but Professor Grafinkel thought that maybe there was a duality in the cultic approach at that time. It was the beginning of Jewish tradition and Canaanite, so he thought maybe this is one to Ishtar or whatever, and I don't think so. I have another
idea. You don't subscribe
to
that.
No, this is the only point that we don't agree on. So that's all right.
Yeah, well, that gets to another question, actually, because I've always looked at these shrine models and thought how amazing they are and how they help explain some of these textual things. And then someone asked the question, well, what would have gone inside of them? And I'd never... I guess it's an obvious question. It's a container of sorts, but it's something I had never thought about really before. Do you have any theories about if they ever held anything inside of them?
There is a depression inside and a hole in the back. So maybe something was kept there and or standing, maybe, and bound with a sort of rope to the hole that is in the back of the... some people said, I don't remember who, maybe it's a maybe the priests were going with the army, and then they had the ephod, a special clothing to accompany them, and then they put this inside. Generally, such a shrine model, we call them shrine model. In the Levant, it's not so obvious that they are holding a figurine of a god. We have only two or three examples. of that, but I think definitely it's cultic.
Mm-hmm.
I'm now writing an article about parallel stone models in Egypt.
Okay.
You have a lot of stone models, and they have inside a statue of a god. But here we are not supposed to have a god inside, but something which is important to cult. So, as I said, maybe it's the clothes of the priest going to the army, accompanying the army.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. I've thought along similar lines that it seems like it held some kind of a religious or devotional
mm-hmm.
item. But perhaps not so dissimilar from, say, in modern synagogues, where you'll have a container that the Torah scroll is held
exactly.
in, sort of an
exactly.
ark-type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there could have been a similar function,
mm-hmm.
whether it contained any kind of text or any kind of objects
yeah.
like that.
And there was writing in Kayafa, anyway.
Right.
So.
Right, that's the ostracon, the famous ostracon.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any more progress about understanding what that says? I know there's a lot of different theories and debates about what exactly it says.
Well, it's difficult to say. I don't want to speak about my feelings or my hopes, because you can feel or hope that it is a part of the Bible, and you know the widow and the orphan and so on. It can be, but it's not to see. The writing has been damaged, so it's difficult.
Mm. Okay.
Difficult.
And then lastly, I just want to talk about this item here. So this is a special item that comes from Lachish. It's much more recent. Just
yeah.
over the past year, I think, nearly a year since it's been
mm-hmm.
Revealed to the public, published, and then I was at the opening ceremony at the Israel
Museum,
where you spoke and where
yeah.
it went on display. So what is this object?
And
there's quite a story with it.
Yeah, it's an incredible story, because at the beginning, I was aware of head lice in this sort of combs, also dating from in Peru, or you have so that sort of combs, and they are some thousand years old, and also around the Dead Sea, the climate allows head lice to be still not alive, but you have some remains of head lice that you can find in combs around in the Judean desert. So I decided to look, but I look under the microscope. As you can see, it's a double-sided comb. This is to help the hair to be detangled.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other side, it's for head lice.
Okay.
A small,
so thicker bristles up here that would have come out.
Yeah, it's
and
a sorry.
Thinner ones
yeah,
down
it's the contrary. It's
yeah.
the contrary. The
oh,
thick
okay.
ones,
yeah.
the thick ones are on this side. They are cut, but and this is the small teeth.
Okay.
And they are supposed to help removing the head lice. And I found some remains, like a skeleton of it's not a skeleton, but a chitin skeleton of one or two head lice. Second was not so sure, so I only mentioned one.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent it to DNA. I had only one, and I don't know what happened. Anyway, I think the sample had been lost, or they didn't find anything, which is a pity. So I put this comb in my drawer at home, even, and I forgot about it. And then one day I said, enough is enough, I'm going to write an article about it. So article was ready. I took pictures, and they were not good enough, so I brought a lamp, stronger lamp, and I, with my phone, only with my phone, and I enlarged the pictures. You can do, you know. I saw later, you have an X here, X,
mm-hmm.
which is obviously like, it looks yeah. like a tough T. It's amazing. So I was not sure, of course, I'm not an expert in writing at all. Mm-hmm. So I sent the pictures to Dr. Daniel Weinstub. I don't know if you
Yeah, he's
you
a
know
friend
him.
Of ours. Yeah.
And he said yes. So I talked with Professor Gaffinger and I said, we have letters there. So.
And I think part of the surprise for this is some people might be wondering why these letters look so obvious here, while it's big and blown up and has a light on it. But this comb is actually very small, isn't it?
Like this.
And then it's so worn down in the middle from obviously when it was being used.
Exactly.
The thumb wearing it down.
It's about something like 3 centimeters high.
And so only under the correct lighting can you even get this kind of an image and see clearly these letters.
Yeah.
So the other question about this would be then, which is part of the significance of it, what's the dating for this? What kind of context was the comb found in?
Okay. The context is not good because it was found by the Adventist group.
Okay.
In the other side of the digging.
Okay.
And it was found in a refusal pit.
Okay.
With all sorts of material. So we can't say exactly, but the writing itself says a lot, because you have an evolution. It's one of the first writings that I think this is the only sentence that can be found with ancient writing, with alphabetic writing.
I remember that in a lot of the headlines.
It was the only
described
one
as
the
earliest
one.
Full yep, sentence.
Exactly. And so, but there is an evolution of the letters. And Dr. Weinstub showed that some of the letters are very ancient, and some of them are progressed in a different form. But definitely, he says that it's dated to 1800 BC.
Nearly 4,000 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing. And we tried, we sent twice or three times, I don't remember, to carbon 14, because that would be the answer. And we scratched a little bit very cautiously, and then we said, okay, let's be less cautious and send a bigger, nothing helped. So we can cut this crumb and finally have the right answer. But anyway, according to the evolution of the letters, it is dated to 1800 BC.
Incredible. And is that a bone comb or an ivory comb?
Ivory.
Ivory.
And it's written on the text. It says there's 17 letters and a whole sentence. And it says that this comb made of ivory from elephant help you get rid of the lice in your hair and in your beard. It's incredible. It seems that to be a present to somebody important, a king or...
Well, it's a remarkable artifact, certainly. And are there any other secret things you're working on like that you can reveal?
No.
You did mention you're working on an article about other stone object or shrine type objects.
Yes.
Where is that going to be published? Do you know?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I'm just finishing the article. It's not yet finished. That's it. In the moment, I have no
Okay, well, we'll look forward to when that comes out. Thank you very much, Dr. Mumshoglu. This is amazing discoveries, of course, and a pleasure to be here and interview you about them. So
I hope I will find something else.
I hope so too.
Back to see you here.
Sounds good to me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.